Welcome into the Patriotically Correct Radio Show, broadcasting live Monday through Friday weekdays. Mojo 5.0 is the iHeart Radio station, the monster of truth. The truth always lives at redvoicemedia.com. Make sure to find me in Rumble, on YouTube, on Twitter, inside of Telegram. Let's see, we're on Facebook, the Patriotically Correct Radio Show Facebook page. You can find us really anywhere. Just search Stu Peters. You'll find all the articles by the haters, of course, calling me a racist and everything else. George Floyd, the trial for Derek Chauvin was completed yesterday, guilty on all counts. He did not receive a fair trial. America did not get justice yesterday, and I'm going to tell you why coming up right after we talk to our premier sponsor on the Patriotically Correct Radio Show, Carlos Cortez, broadcasting live from the Cortez Wealth Management Studios, the home of the America First Retirement Plan. Call him in the office anytime, 813-448-3446, or visit him online at CortezWM.com. Carlos, welcome to the program today. Big news in the finance market. The market is exploding. The Dow way up, bless you. The Dow way up, and it's green. What's going on?
Yeah, a lot of momentum right now in the markets. Usually when you have a little bit of a correction, but several trading sessions of negative days in the market, you'll see a bounce back. This is natural. This is a natural move up. It's just people trying to get in at a lower rate, buy low, sell high, even though emotions tell you to do the reciprocal all the times. But yeah, our investors, our clients, they're well positioned for the upswings and a downswing. So America First Retirement Plan is our home, and we're having some great success in the market. Joe Biden and his corrupted agenda is very predictable. The question is, are you making money? How do you position yourself knowing that we can do certain things?
The mainstream people can't do, like the mainstream media will never tell you the truth. Neither will the mainstream advisors, the pro Biden advisors, these people that are trapped into a box that's controlled by Wall Street, controlled by the regime, by the establishment politicians, and controlled by these big box corporations that are all manipulating all of it. An independent fiduciary has to answer to nobody. You're not a franchise. You're the CEO. You're the founder of Cortez Wealth Management. You're a God-fearing patriot. You're a family man. You're a father. You're a husband, and you want to take care of the great people that listen to Patriotically Correct, and
we wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, and we appreciate that. I get excited talking about Cortez Wealth Management because I get excited talking to real patriots, doing business with real patriots, and I'm so confident in sending you towards Cortez Wealth Management. Make sure that you visit them today, CortezWM.com. Coming up on the program, we're going to talk to Steve Pomper. He's a former cop in Seattle. He's going to talk about the aiming, the targeting, and the destruction of law enforcement in America. But first, I'm going to get to what happened yesterday with Derek Chauvin as Patriotically Correct starts right now. So after the verdict was read in Minneapolis, after the prosecution asked Derek Chauvin's bond to be revoked and for him to be immediately remanded to the custody of the sheriff, Derek Chauvin knew that he was going back to jail. His attorney no doubt prepped him for that. They knew from the beginning that he was going to jail. They knew from the beginning that there would be a conviction handed down by this jury. I'm going to explain all that. I'm going to tell you why. But he knew that he was going back to jail. He knew that he was not walking out of that courtroom a free man. He's still being tried, I believe, for tax evasion. There were several other charges other than murder. There was going to be a conviction handed down. He was going to go to jail. He was going to serve a prison sentence for the incident that took place in Minneapolis involving the death of George Floyd. He knew that. He was prepared for that. He was ready for that. There was little to no reaction on his face. There was little to no reaction on the face of his attorney. And that's because they knew. They knew that there was going to be a conviction yesterday, and he knew he was going to prison due to a criminal conviction. So what did he do? He immediately stood up. He immediately stood up. He put his hands behind his back, and he cooperated. Now, can you imagine where we would be today if George Floyd had done the same thing? Can you imagine where we would be today if Jacob Blake had done the same thing, if Dante Wright had done the same thing? Can you imagine where we would be today if criminals complied? You will have your day in court, and if the police do something to you that's unjust, they will have theirs. Derek Chauvin had his day in court, but he didn't have a fair trial. Mob rule won in America yesterday. Now, the lesson and the serious warning that I want to make sure that you take away from the trial of Derek Chauvin And pay attention if you're a cop, particularly if you're a white police officer, you will never, ever again be right. There is no way that you, as a white cop, can ever be involved in any use of force situation with a non-white person and be fairly evaluated afterward, in the aftermath, after the incident. Never. Now, specifically relating to this, from the very beginning of the media spectacle surrounding the George Floyd death here in South Minneapolis, it was politicized by radical progressive leftists. It was used against black communities in impoverished neighborhoods of democratically controlled major cities in America, which have become or remained modern day plantations for that political party. That's not racist. That's fact. Democrats don't talk to black people outside of election cycles. Come on, we know that. They don't pay attention to the black community. They're not around when black people are dying in astounding numbers as a result of gang and gun violence in their cities, in their gun-free safe zones, like in Chicago, where it's unlawful for me to carry, possess, or own a firearm, apparently. But yet over 60 people can easily be reported shot over the course of a normal weekend in that city. But guns are illegal. You're not allowed to have them. And to discuss the fact that criminals don't follow laws, well, that's not fact. That's racist. Derek Chauvin's actions, I'm not here to defend them. I'm not here to say that I think it looked good for Derek Chauvin to be kneeling over a suspect for an extended period of time, no matter the suspect's color. I worked in Minneapolis for a long time dealing with violent fugitives wanted for crimes against persons as a bail enforcement agent. I jailed a lot of really, really bad people over the course of over a decade, and I dealt with the Minneapolis Police Department daily. I know hundreds of Minneapolis cops. And brotherhoods have been formed with a handful of them. Those are friendships unlike any other relationships that I will ever know in my life, and they are forever. It's just different when you put your life in the hands of someone else, or when you ask someone else to put their life in your hands. It's just a different thing. But Chauvin, I didn't know him. I never worked with him. I never worked alongside of him. I didn't ever have an extended conversation with him. We said our hellos and we said our goodbyes. We passed each other multiple times a week in the corner store where I frequented for coffee, but I didn't know his demeanor. I didn't know how he typically interacted with the public. I didn't have a chance to observe that ever. I don't know what was going through his head when he was dealing with George Floyd that day. I can't speculate. Now, I was called a racist for continuously mentioning Floyd's past, because that's supposedly irrelevant. Even though it should be relevant that Derek Chauvin and George Floyd knew each other, Chauvin no doubt knew about Floyd's past, his history, but that's racist to talk about. I was racist for bringing up the fact that George Floyd served 9 prison sentences previously. For pointing out that it appeared George Floyd was high on meth and fentanyl, which by the way was later proven by the medical examiner. For highlighting George Floyd's extensive criminal history involving violence toward innocent victims or his habitual tendency to resist law enforcement. Mentioning all of these things are racist. Mentioning that George Floyd resisted arrest is a racist thing to say. Despite that it's factual, that doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter that there are facts surrounding Floyd's death. I'm not here to break down all the evidence because I'm not an attorney. I wasn't on the jury. I wasn't in the courtroom every day. I wasn't at the scene. I'm not an expert on police use of force policies or the training that Chauvin and all of the other, by the way, Minneapolis cops receive on that department-approved neck restraint used for uncooperative suspects. But the fact that I do want to talk about is the fact that the medical examiner noted that there were no abrasions or contusions around George Floyd's neck. But that doesn't matter. That's none of my business. That's racist. The media immediately spotlighted the angry mob screaming about a racially motivated murder. Big tech magically started trending "I can't breathe" as a hashtag. So the neck was a big deal. I mean, right? The neck was a big deal. So why did we forget about all of that during the trial. Why did the expert medical analysis of the Hennepin County coroner hold no weight with this jury? Well, stick with me. I'm going to tell you why. It's a rhetorical question. The ME report also said that Floyd did not die from trauma associated with asphyxiation, but that rather his heart exploded after he ingested a lethal amount of street drugs, enough to kill three people, three times the lethal amount of fentanyl and meth that were in his system that he ingested. But that doesn't weigh in here because this is a racist murder. A murder. So that's public opinion. I get that. Public opinion is going to happen. I think it's healthy for public opinion to be heard. But being heard is different now than it was in the days of, say, Martin Luther King Jr. Being heard now is burning down occupied buildings, torching the businesses of people that had nothing to do with George Floyd, nothing to do with Derek Chauvin, torching the businesses of people that were completely uninvolved, grabbing Gucci bags and Nike shoes. That's being heard. Because that's really driving home the point that you're unfairly treated by law enforcement who are charged with the responsibility of enforcing laws. It's illegal to do these things, but it's racist to react to these things. I see. The conviction of Derek Chauvin is not a victory for justice. And whether or not Judge Jeanine Pirro wants to grandstand on the Gutfeld show over at Fox News Channel in the middle of the night, or if Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo, the notorious criers over at CNN, along with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, want to say, well, we still have a long way to go, and that justice for Black Americans still hasn't been truly recognized, what needs to be known here is that the fact is there will never be another good cop ever again. Because why would anybody ever want that job? Why would any good, sane, level-headed, psychologically stable person ever sign up for that? Why would anyone want that job today? Why would anyone sign up for a certain failure? Are we really going to believe that someone gets involved? I mean, let's just really ask ourselves to be honest with ourselves here for a minute. Are we going to believe that someone throughout their childhood has a dream to be a cop? When I grow up, I'm going to be a police officer. That's something that's in somebody's blood. That's not something that you just decide after laying hardwood floors for two decades and you want to jump into another career and you say, oh, I think being a cop would be a good idea. Come on. It's not how it happens. So it's in somebody's blood. It's in their heart. It's a call for service. So then after high school, they get involved with post-secondary education around the law enforcement curriculum. Whether it's a two-year degree, an associate's in applied science degree in law enforcement, a four-year criminal justice degree, police administration, master's degrees, bachelor's degrees, all of those things, they get involved with schooling. They go to skills training, at least here in Minnesota. They make it through backgrounding, psychological evaluations, and these things are not easy. They get accepted to and hired by a law enforcement agency. They graduate from the academy. They complete a strenuous and lengthy FTO process, field training process, and then they go into minority neighborhoods to work as police officers with the intent to hunt down and kill Black people. Is that really what you believe? I know it's not what you really believe. It can't be. A member of the United States Congress from California, who has more than likely never even been to Minnesota, much less Minneapolis, knows nothing about the Minneapolis Police Department, the history of the department. Maxine Waters stood on the streets of Minneapolis and incited real violence. And it doesn't matter what these pundits want to tell you on these fake news major broadcast networks and these cable news progressive communist state-run networks. It doesn't matter what they tell you or how they try to justify the words of Maxine Waters. She encouraged people to become, quote, more confrontational if the jury didn't reach the verdict that she desired. More confrontational. Those were her words. Break them down. What does more mean? That means not less. More than what? Well, more than what history is. If you pour me a cup of coffee and I say, next time pour me more, you're going to compare to last time the amount of coffee that you poured me. Last summer in the United States of America, major cities burned to the ground. It's not mentioned on CNN and barely mentioned on the Fox News channel or any of these other so-called conservative outlets that Portland is still on fire. These cities are still burning to the ground. What's more confrontational than burning down a city? What does that tell people in Minneapolis and around the country? It means get more confrontational than you were last summer when you assaulted innocent people, raped women, looted neighborhood stores, burned them to the ground, and systematically targeted and assassinated cops around the country just because they were wearing a uniform, just because they were cops. The jury saw that. They saw all of that. They saw Auntie Maxine on the streets of Minneapolis saying those things 1,000%. These politicians began weighing in from the beginning. And that had a tremendous impact. It had a massive effect, not only on the public, but on that unsequestered jury. And I'll argue all day long. And don't go double standards on me saying, well, people don't listen to politicians. Because if that is the case, Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon, or Judge Jeanine Pirro, if that is the case, Greg Gutfeld, or Kat Timpf, or Tyrus, I saw the show last night. If the politicians don't make a difference now, then how can you say that Donald Trump made a difference when he incited violence by encouraging his supporters to be patriotic and peaceful? Politicians only have influence when it's convenient for your narrative. You people in the media are disgusting. The way you walk around like you are a can of gas, just waiting to be poured out on top of any horrible, horrific situation in our country that could be used to bring us closer together, but instead you turn yourself upside down on top of a small flame and blow the whole damn thing up. Every single time. You do it for clicks. You do it for followers. You do it for trending hashtags. You do it for your growing social media platforms, because without it, you're irrelevant. You can't just talk about the truth. You can't just talk about policies. You can't just point out facts and then commentate on facts. You have to make up lies and instill this false narrative across the country and divide this country in order to get those clicks. It is disgusting. Those words of Maxine Waters had a tremendous impact and a massive effect on that unsequestered jury. These people were instructed by this naive judge to go home each night and not watch the news. Really? You're asking these people to ignore their human instinct? Did the judge really expect that these people would not be curious? They wouldn't want to know how the trial was being reported on? Come on. It's human nature. It's just not realistic. It's not a fair request of regular people. They're not machines. a request of regular people to go home and completely ignore the fact that they are sitting on a jury for a trial that the entire world is watching. The entire world is watching because the world is looking to America to see if we are going to respond to the demands of violent Marxists pushing for the absence of the rule of law, the dismantling of our Constitution, the tearing down of our justice system, and if we were going to cower to the mob. And we did. You're going to tell me that this jury wasn't affected by the mob outside of that courthouse? They didn't see that as they were coming and going each day. They didn't feel threatened by the fear of doxing. This is the reality that we live in. Terrell Owens doxed me on Twitter as a result of a non-appearance on this program. I'm not a juror deciding the fate of Derek Chauvin in a phony murder trial that the whole world is watching, and I was doxed. You don't think that these jurors feel threatened when they watch a pig head get thrown at the former residence of a witness during the trial? These are methods of intimidation, and the media drove the fear right into that jury, right into that judge. And Chauvin and his attorney didn't react because they knew it. I had experts, former police officers, current police officers, former and current command staffs, attorneys, you know, all the experts weighing in on this program. Every cop in the city of Minneapolis, every cop in Chicago, New York, Baltimore, every other democratically controlled city ruled over by a leftist mayor or governed by a progressive city council should walk right now. Will they? Probably not. Probably not all of them. They've worked their whole life to be where they are. They're stuck. They have a retirement. They have a para. They have a pension plan. They're vested financially, and in their heart and soul, they had a calling to do this. Just like you don't go from laying hardwood floors into running to be a cop, you don't go running from being a cop into doing hardwood floors. So will they walk? Probably not. Probably not all of them. But yes, a lot of them will. I'm getting calls from Minneapolis police officers, good cops, that are telling me that they're done, and I don't blame them. Why would they stay? Why would they stay? So let's talk about who wins. Who wins in this case? Who wins and who loses? The progressive radical leftists win because they're now able to control the narrative of our justice system under the threat of violence. Think about that. That's not justice. That's not America. That's not where a people are free. That is communism. That's a communist society. And this wokeness that the left is capitalizing on, they will weaponize these woke police command staffs that will enforce their mandates, their lockdowns, their social distancing, their masking and business restrictions, while they completely turn their backs on real violent crime. The political system cannot be toppled. The government cannot be overthrown. A president cannot be removed without the absence of the rule of law. And they have now achieved that. They win. They win. Who loses? Who loses? Black people lose. Minorities lose. The impoverished minority community is being subjected to violence, living without fathers in their home, fearing the gangbangers that run their streets, watching their kids get hooked on dope, abducted, forced into sex trafficking, raped, robbed, dealing with being assaulted every day. They won't have cops there. They lose because those cops are going to leave. And the ones that don't, they're not going to be responding to calls that involve a non-white suspect. And why should they? Criminals have now been told that the best case scenario is to resist arrest and then hope that the cop does something in the heat of the moment that isn't perfect or looks bad on tape. It'll immediately be turned into an issue of race. And that criminal will go from zero to hero as quickly as the cell phone footage hits the internet. The police departments and city councils will then turn around and spend taxpayer dollars to enrich the criminal or their families, as in the case of George Floyd, where we saw in Minneapolis to the tune of $27 million before a verdict was handed down in the criminal case, which was another intentional step to influence that jury. It was meant to intimidate them and to force their verdict. The clear message to non-white criminals is that there is no burden of responsibility for any of their actions, criminal or not, and that they will never be held accountable. Think about that. Resisting the police is now the best course of action for non-white criminals. They are setting you up. They are winning this big psyop. They are setting you up. From the beginning of this trial, the media attached an emotion to the death of George Floyd, to that videotape. And no matter what anyone says, it's impossible for emotion to just go away, to be removed from the minds of the jurors responsible for dissecting and disseminating fact and determining whether or not Derek Chauvin is guilty of murder beyond a shadow of a doubt, which is the burden of the state to prove. That is what the justice system is supposed to do. That is what justice is supposed to look like. That is what justice is supposed to be. Maybe Judge Jeanine Pirro has forgotten about it. Remember, we still have multiple other cops being tried in Minneapolis. Kim Potter from Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, now will be tried for manslaughter in the death of Dante Wright. A Chicago cop may face criminal charges in the shooting death of a 13-year-old violent gangbanger. And many, many more will come as these communists encourage blacks to resist arrest and become violent in the streets to demand the prosecution of the police. Derek Chauvin did not get a fair trial. America did not get justice. And this is only the beginning. Well, today is an incredibly special day for a lot of reasons, but one of those reasons is that everybody is getting the veteran discount on Verve Forever CBD products. CBD, a natural and holistic way of dealing with psychological issues, stress, anxiety. Maybe you have PTSD. Maybe you or your child is dealing with ADHD. Maybe you deal with migraine headaches or allergies. Maybe you're like me and you have muscle pain, joint pain, ligament pain. CBD is a natural and holistic way that you can deal with all of these things without shoving these chemicals down your throat. And today you get 50% off. Everybody gets 50% off by going to AmericaFirstOil.com right now and entering the promo code VET50. 50% off all of the products site-wide. If you are not a CBD user or a customer of a CBD company, you need to immediately check out the benefits, the positive way that CBD will impact your life. I'm telling you, before I knew about this stuff, now knowing about it, I don't know how I dealt without it. You need CBD in your life. I guarantee you that it will positively impact you. Now, if you are already up on the CBD game and you're using a CBD product from a non-veteran-owned company, why? Why are you doing business with a company that's not owned by a patriot, by an American, by a veteran of the United States military? You can now do business with Verve Forever, a veteran-owned company. All of the CBD products, are sourced right here in the United States. The highest quality CBD at the most affordable prices already, and now today, 50% off for everybody, site-wide. Use the promo code VET50 when you visit them online at AmericaFirstOil.com. That's Verve Forever. AmericaFirstOil.com. Tell them that Stu sent you and use the promo code VET50 for 50% off site-wide at AmericaFirstOil.com. Well, now that we've talked about the fallout from the guilty verdict in the unfair trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, the systematic targeting of law enforcement needs to be addressed. The provoking of anarchy, the destruction of cities, the intimidation of law-abiding Americans like you and me. These are all very real strategic and integral components necessary for the total absence of the rule of law, which is required for the installation of an authoritarian rule where every person is subservient to the state. That's the end goal here. I've been warning about that, and it should be becoming completely apparent for all of you. Steve Pomper is an author. He's a freelance writer. He's a retired Seattle police officer. During his career, he served as a field training officer on the community police team and as a mountain bike patrol coordinator. He's written 5 books, including his most recent, The Obama Gang and Depolicing America. Pomper joins us now. Steve, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
In your new book, you pinpoint the false narrative of the left, specifically the Obama Foundation. You target that group and that organization's rhetoric surrounding systemic racism in law enforcement. Real facts and stats prove this to be a flat-out lie, but yet the talking points continue to be regurgitated by the media. So what is the real objective of Obama and his cronies on the radical left? What is their primary goal?
Well, you know, obviously what they go for is disruption. They want to disrupt the system so they can change it. They want to weaken American traditional, what you could say sometime are conservative institutions, of which the police are one of the few left. And I think that's why they're attacking us so hard right now, is because they've gone after academia. They've gotten the culture. They've gotten right now a hold of the government. And what they need to do is they need to weaken the police so that they can basically either get puppets in there that they can use to enforce their socialist agenda, or they can get rid of us with, you know, what they consider dinosaurs.
Yeah. So the dinosaurs, explain that for our listening audience. I'm pretty familiar with the term, but this means the people that are policing with the real integrity of police work, fighting crime, jumping out on suspicion, proactive policing, targeting gangbangers, those that are carrying guns, selling drugs in neighborhoods. That's what a dinosaur is, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, and that terminology actually went around my department when they basically were starting to lose a lot of the officers who were actually out there doing the job. You know, it's one of those things where I don't know if there's another profession where more people who don't do the job think they know how to do it better than the people who are trained to do it. And, you know, the training that we get to do it, it lasts a long time. I mean, Seattle Police Department right now, you come in and it's 6 months before you even hit the street. And once you hit the street, you've got 3 more months of FTO, and then you've got a year of probation after that. How many occupations have that kind of restriction or gauntlet basically to run through before you can even start doing the job yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I heard somebody comparing being a school teacher to being a police officer. These people are facing more real danger today amid COVID and all of this other stuff than a police officer does. I mean, these conversations, you scratch your head and you go, are people really digesting this and accepting this as reality when they watch these communist news networks, state-controlled media outlets? I mean, I saw a guy on the television just the other day, CNN, he's being interviewed at the riots here in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, after an officer apparently mistakenly shot a guy, mistaking her gun for a taser. And this guy's holding a can of soup. And he winks at the camera and says, this is soup for my family. But the audience at home, these CNN followers, these sheeple, as I refer to them, are actually accepting this as reality, that this guy is just an innocent person. He's out here with a can of soup.
Yeah, I did hear that one and see that one. And, you know, that's just another variation on freezing the water bottles. This way they don't have to freeze them. They got them, they come already ready, weaponized, basically, to be able to use them. Out here in Seattle and Portland, We're used to this stuff. This isn't anything new for us. You know, the rest of the country is kind of catching up, unfortunately, to what we've been going through for many, many years. I mean, just to give you an anecdote, back in the 90s, when I first got on the Seattle Police Department, we actually had people show up to protest at the East Precinct, the famous Chop Chaz where I was stationed.
Yeah.
And they were protesting bombing, the Navy bombing in Puerto Rico. This is how protest prone, you know, that city out there in the West Coast has been, those West Coast cities. And now it's just, you know, transmitting out to the rest of the country.
We're talking to Steve Pomper, Seattle police officer retired. He's the author of The Obama Gang. Go get the book. So the foundation states on its website, quote, the Reimagining Police Pledge. What exactly is this pledge that these mayors and these command staffs at these woke law enforcement agencies are supposed to take? What does the pledge say?
Well, this is what gave the National Police Association the, you know, basically impetus to write the book, was when we started seeing that President Obama was actively engaged in with his My Brother's Keeper's alliance to bring out this pledge where he gets mayors across the city, of which he's got a lot, to pledge that they will basically, you know, redo or whatever they want to call it, their police departments.
Completely overhaul them, completely change them, get rid of them, disarm them.
And that's exactly what they're doing. What they do is they agree that they're going to go and basically take a look at their department, their use of force, and then they're going to engage the public. They can basically go out to whatever groups they choose, and they get anecdotes from the public about the police. And you can imagine the people they're going to talk to and what they're going to hear about the police. Then they get them to say that they're going to review the use of force statutes and then report back to them. And then go ahead and, you know, basically fix the police department, whether they find anything wrong or not. That's never part of it. Another thing that's not part of it is the talking to the police. They're not a part of the process. This is just, we're going to go in and we're going to do this, and that's all there is to it.
And that not talking to the police is a big thing. I mean, even in hiring, most of these hiring councils now are made up of citizens who, I was a part of one of these hiring panels, and there was actually a woman on the hiring panel who, after hearing from all of these candidates, which, by the way, the selection pool of candidates for policing now is tremendously low, number one, and then the quality of the candidate is unbelievable. But here's this guy, he's a white kid, he served in Afghanistan, he had an impeccable service record with the United States military, he was a security forces agent or a military police officer, had no disciplinary history. He had his four-year degree in criminal justice. He had gone through skills training. He was eligible to be licensed in the state of Minnesota. He went before the post board. I mean, the guy didn't ever even have a speeding ticket. And he walks out and everybody looks at each other. And this woman says, you know, I'm just really tired of these militaristic, white, head-shaven people. This is not the look that we want for our community. And everybody just kind of turned and looked at each other. But this is really how people are approaching the hiring of law enforcement officers now. These are the people that we're going to be replacing the quote-unquote dinosaurs with.
Right.
And so what is that going to do to the communities, specifically the black and brown or minority communities on the south side of Chicago or in Brooklyn Center, the north side of Minneapolis, Detroit, Baltimore, Philadelphia, all of these liberally controlled democratic strongholds where they're really experiencing violence, gun violence. I mean, Chicago, I pointed out earlier in the program, it's not an abnormal weekend for 60 shootings to be reported and for people to just be dying, killing each other at nauseam down there. The real victims are the ones that are being played here, are the black members of the community.
Oh, right. Absolutely. And, you know, it's all about reform. That was the word I was looking for earlier. The reform, reform, reform. And that's what they're going for. And they think they put everything under that that banner. And what you've got is when they try to do that, then they're looking for a totally different candidate. They're not looking for someone that a police officer would look at and say, that's a good cop right there. What they're looking for is their fantasy image of what they think is going to be a cop.
I want to stop you right there because I think it's important. Not everybody's a cop. And not everybody has what it takes to be a cop, which is why, you know, we need to support those that have that calling for service and do go take on that job. It's a thankless job, and they're not doing it for the money. I could guarantee you that because I have dozens of really close brothers that are cops, and I know hundreds of them, thousands of them across the country. But I think something that I want to point out is you said a cop wouldn't look at them and say these things. That's a good cop right there. But most importantly, what is a member of the community going to say when they look at a police officer? A police officer who's willing to run directly towards gunfire, put himself between an imminent threat of great bodily harm or death and an innocent person, regardless of the victim's color, their political ideology, their religious beliefs, their sexual orientation, or any of the above. I would pledge to say, speaking of pledges, Barack Obama and all of you woke mayors, I would pledge to say that the majority of police officers don't even ever have a split second to look at the color of the victim that they're protecting or the color of the suspect that they're engaging at the time when they have to decide what level of force is required to stop that imminent threat.
Absolutely. It's an absolute fantasy. And what they're doing by teaching this in the academies, which is what they're doing, this critical race theory, that's all infused in the academies in places like Washington. And what they're doing is they're instilling hesitation in the officers. When they come out, the first thing that they don't know what to do. I mean, they actually want officers, new officers coming out, not only to report their senior officer, the FTO, the whatever, the veterans, report what they consider misconduct, which is bad enough. They want to pass laws where they're required to basically intervene at the moment. And can you imagine what that looks like in real life when a student officer is out there with his FTO or her FTO and then looking to see what's and doesn't understand what the FTO is doing based on years and years of experience. And then they're supposed to intercede on what the veteran officer is doing without knowing the background or anything that's going on. That's just going to cause, all kinds of ripples of problems throughout policing in America.
So this pledge that they're talking about basically is forcing mayors, forcing command staffs, forcing appointed police chiefs and some elected sheriffs, unfortunately, to basically accept the fact that their department is systemically racist and then completely change the approach on training, change the use of force policies. And basically what we're asking cops to do now is hold off on any use of force, basically take a bullet, specifically if they're dealing with a non-white suspect. I mean, that's what the facts are. That's what I'm reading into here. Am I over the target or am I like wearing a tinfoil hat?
No, you're right there. You remember that situation in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where if you've seen the video, the officer arrives, he's alone, he's standing on the sidewalk, and this guy just crashes out of an apartment. He's got a knife held over his head, and he's charging the officer and just screaming. I mean, like you would see in a movie. I mean, it looked like a mock scene at the academy. And basically, the BLM, Antifa, they rioted that night over that. Over the officer shooting that person running at him with a butcher knife.
We have now, a suspect
and,
here in
Minneapolis. I think it was Heather McDonald wrote about that and said, what are the officers supposed to do? Allow themselves to be stabbed or shot? Yeah. And that's what it's looking like.
On the streets of Minneapolis, a murder suspect, a suspect who just committed a fresh murder. Great investigative work by the Minneapolis Police Department. I believe the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office was involved. The feds were involved. I mean, within a matter of hours, they find this guy. He's downtown Minneapolis. The guy's got a gun on him. The cops find him. They start to approach him. He pulls the gun out. He shoots himself, right? So immediately the tweet or the social media posts that went out were that the police killed another black guy, even though he took his own life. They began rioting. It was amazing. I mean, within minutes, this organized, you got to give the left credit because their organizational skills are unbelievable. They are funded and ready to go right now. And they were down there tearing up Minneapolis. Nobody was prepared for that. Like, at the end of the Chauvin trial here, we saw in the days upcoming the verdict, businesses were boarding up. They were preparing for the anarchy, the violence, because we know the tactics of the left. We know what they're going to do. They're going to burn. They're going to loot. They're going to take Nikes and Gucci bags, and they're going to hurt and rape and maim innocent people. We get that. We understand that. But they didn't have time to do that. Now, with that being said, when it was then found out or it was disseminated by law enforcement, and of course confirmed by the woke media, that no, it's okay. The police are telling the truth here. The guy did take his own life. Then the narrative changed to, he would have never had to do that if the police hadn't been present.
Right. You know what it is, Stu, that's the formula, isn't it? I thought about it, thinking about how, if it's only, I've heard any numbers from, 9 to 20 unarmed people, or black people killed by police per year. And of course, they're still dangerous when that happens. But, the formula seems to be the incident occurs. People say, unarmed person, person shot by police. And then you find out later they weren't. But the thing is, every single time you have a valid shooting comes out, they're coming out with unarmed murder. It doesn't matter what happens after that. And it makes it seem like there's all these cases just keep coming out of cops shooting unarmed people. But then you find out they're armed. You find out they were dangerous. You find out afterwards. But it doesn't matter afterwards. It's that initial report that they go out and do. I saw it in D.C.
Yeah.
And if race showed up at the precinct. Yeah.
If race is going to be the big thing, if that's going to be the talking point, if that's going to be what determines how we imagine or reimagine policing and how what kind of reform we take, if race is going to be the big thing, then why doesn't the media play it fairly? When you have a white cop that shoots a black guy, race is immediately there. Black suspect shot by white police officer. But when it's the other way around, the headline completely omits race altogether. It's just a shooter or an active shooter if the suspect happens to be black. Or it's a police-involved shooting of a violent suspect when, you know, a black officer shoots a white guy. So is this really, is there any chance at all moving forward that in any use of force situation, justifiable or not, even in the most justifiable use of force situations by a white police officer involving a minority or non-white suspect, is there any chance at all that that cop will ever be right? Again, ever.
Never. In fact, not in any use of force situation. You know, they've set it up where basically if a situation goes sideways, they've determined already that the officer failed to de-escalate or whatever other one term they want to use. And that's what they're going with right now. It's always the officer's fault. It's always going to be the officer's fault. And I think that some of the mistakes we make on the right sometimes is to think, oh, they just don't understand, or they need to, you know, if they just would get it in their heads. No, they're not like a political opponents anymore. They're political enemies. They're actually enemies of our society. I really believe that. And they want to bring it down. They want to bring down traditional America. They want to bring down traditional policing. And that's their job. They're doing it. It's not that they don't understand. They understand exactly what they're doing. And it's going according to their plan. Just like you said earlier, they are so coordinated and organized. And that's one of the things we wanted with the Obama game, is to let people know this is not organic uprisings, people getting off of their couch, coming out into the streets because they're so upset about what the police did. You know, this is whether it was George Floyd or anybody, they were waiting for something like that to happen. They just needed that tipping point, or, you know, to be able to just get out on the streets and do what they do.
They have created a best case scenario for non-white violent criminals. And that is resist the police. Because
absolutely,
if you do, you will go from zero criminal to hero martyr at the snap of a finger. You and or your family or all of the above will become instant multimillionaires ahead of any conviction. The due process, if you say the word due process, we saw what happened. A city administrator was fired in Brooklyn Center by the mayor for mentioning that the officer had due process. And you talk about all this in your book, The Obama Gang. It's available now. Go get the book. We're talking to Steve Pomper. He's a Seattle police officer, retired. So on the website for the Obama Foundation, they state that over 300 communities, and including all of the 10 most populous U.S. cities, have taken the pledge to reimagine policing. So what's going on in these particular cities now?
Well, you know, I can tell you that the first story that we read that gave us the impetus was in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, which is not a big city, but it's in eastern, you know, Pennsylvania. And what they did is they decided that right after they had really bad flooding, and they were able to use a police armored vehicle that they had gotten from military surplus or whatever it was to rescue people during this flood. The mayor had signed the pledge and decided to demilitarize the police and took away that vehicle just because of how it looks, not because of how it performs, just because of how it looks. It militarized. And that was his way of complying with the what we call the omerta, you know, or the pledge that they sign, you know, with Obama to basically, you know, get rid of militarization and whatever. And basically, it's also quasi-federalizing local police departments by trying to adhere to one, you know, national standard, rather than, everybody knows, local, you know, law enforcement is local. Everybody, you know, and but yeah, you know, I mean, think about that one. Taking it away after it's proven its efficiency or its value in saving actual lives.
Now, I talked on the phone with the president of the police union in Ithaca, New York. They are facing their own battle there, where the city of Ithaca, specifically the mayor, who I believe is trying to distract away from the defunding of the police and some of the things going on with the pension plans there. He's not a favorite in the community, but now he's taking the pledge and he's promised to get rid of the entire police department. They're all going to be fired, essentially. At the bottom line is that's what this means. They're all going to have to reapply for positions, the majority of which will be unarmed positions. Now, imagine me being the father of a daughter sending her to, by the way, a very expensive and prestigious school in Ithaca. I'm paying a lot of money. And the reason why I'm paying that money is because I feel like my daughter, or my sons for that matter, would be safe going to school there. But now they will not be safe. They will feel less safe. And who's going to want to go to school in a place where there's nobody there to protect my daughter against a potential rapist or somebody that wants to do harm or bring harm to her?
Yeah, I don't know why any parent would send their child there. As I understand it, in the Ithaca example, too, that we're talking about, that mayor there did what I was talking about before, as far as he had to come out and apologize for not including the police in his decision or in his process for going through what he was doing. The police weren't even a part of it. It's like we're just a side note, you know, in what they use as a fodder for creating their version of some perfect utopia. And this is so ridiculous in the real world. I can't imagine the bubble that those folks live in where they can't see, you know, what they're doing. They can't see what they're doing to their communities.
And you
it's
would
just
think
absolutely
that
ridiculous. The virtue signaling takes over for all.
You would think that the schools would get involved and say, hold on a minute, we don't support this because we're going to see a tremendous reduction in the amount of money that we're taking in here for tuition, because who wants to be here? In Denver, Colorado, you stated in your bullet points, the activists sponsored a statewide legislation that's reduced the protection for qualified immunity for police officers. That's a really big deal. In San Francisco, promised to send unarmed social workers, not the police, similar to here in Minneapolis, to respond to calls for people in a psychiatric, behavioral, or substance abuse crisis. Steve, most of the people that are involved in psychiatric, behavioral, or substance abuse crises are people that these are the situations that are the most volatile, the most dangerous, the most unpredictable for even the best trained and armed, capable police officers to respond to. When is it going to be that these activists or these people like Obama and the Obama Foundation and these radicals, what is it going to take? Are we going to have these people be shot, killed, murdered in the streets because they were responding, trying to help?
I think for some of them, that's what it might take. But the thing is, like I said before,
or maybe they want that.
This is what they want to do. This is their, you know, what they're after. They're after policing collapsing. In Seattle here, a few months ago, we had a social worker at a facility in downtown Seattle who was stabbed by one of her clients there. I mean, out of nowhere, the guy pulled a knife out of a shopping bag and just killed her right there. And that's a preview. I mean, she wasn't in organized response like they're talking about doing, but she's the type of person they're going to put on that kind of a response team. And he's the kind of person that they're going to respond to. And what she, you know, people don't understand the reason that we carry guns is an insurance policy. I mean, you live in your house your whole life and it doesn't burn down. You know, was your insurance a waste of time? No, it was just in case. Same thing. Yeah. I went through my entire career, a couple decades, and fortunately, I never had to shoot anybody. You know, that was good. But
well,
I always tell people,
service.
Do you ever? They say, do you use your gun? I say, yeah, use it every day. It's right here.
That's right. Yeah. Providence, Rhode Island, they proposed taking pension benefits away from any officer accused of criminal excessive force or accused of using excessive force against a criminal. I have a suggestion. Why don't we remove welfare benefits from any of those that are accused of rioting or, you know, inciting violence in a community after one of these alleged incidents? Get his book. It's called The Obama Gang. Steve Pomper, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Talking about the great sponsors on my show makes me extremely excited, and I'm really excited today to talk about Verve Forever, because site-wide you get 50% off. Number one, I just want to throw that out there. Everybody gets the veteran discount today by entering the promo code VET50 at AmericaFirstOil.com, but I really get excited about talking about Verve because I'm a customer of Verve. I have experienced the real-life positive impact that Verve Forever CBD has made in my life. I was going to have surgery, probably painkillers for the rest of my life to deal with this unbelievable, excessive, intolerable pain in my shoulder. I woke up in the morning. I had no range of motion. I couldn't drive my truck without wincing in pain, but now no pain, none whatsoever, zero pain because I use Verve Forever CBD cream. I don't even have to use it every day anymore. At first, I used it more often than I do now. I hardly rarely ever have to use it. It cured me. Verve CBD cured my arthritis in my shoulder. I have no pain at all whatsoever. If you have joint pain, ligament pain, knee pain, back pain, migraines, if you're dealing with stress and anxiety, maybe you have PTSD that you're dealing with or ADHD issues that you're you're dealing with. Allergies. CBD can address all of these things in a natural and holistic way. And today, 50% off site-wide on all of the great products from Verve Forever, a veteran-owned company, a patriot-owned company, a United States-owned company. All of the CBD products sourced right here in Colorado. Tim Klund, a veteran of the United States Air Force, says, go today. Today, and get 50% off site-wide Verve Forever products at AmericaFirstOil.com. Make sure that you tell them that Stu sent you, AmericaFirstOil.com.
Broadcasting live from the highest cloud of privileged patriotism, the PC Radio Show is on Mojo 5-0 Radio.
Broadcasting live from the Cortez Wealth Management Studios, weekdays Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget to check me out in Parler on Rumble and the encrypted email if you have a news tip or a story, stupeters@protonmail.com. Call the phone number 877-45-WARRIOR to leave feedback at any time, including you haters. Until tomorrow, here's what's up to it, here's what's down to it, here's to any way you can get to it, here's to those that don't do it, may they be dragged to it, tied to it, or forced to it, and here's to us who do it, because we're the ones that's used to it. Remember to fly low and avoid the radar. One day they're going to come for the car, and when they do, save the radio!